The Indiana Baptist Historical Society is pleased to present the following lectures given by Terry Wolliver of the Particular Baptist Press. Part 2. Utilizing Genealogical Data.
In this second session, we will be looking at how to actually do genealogy. We will be looking at actually how to incorporate genealogy into researching a Baptist historical figure. In the front of your folder, on the left side, you will see a research tool provided by our local genealogical library. And for those of you in other states or other locales, you can get these usually at your genealogical society library. But this contains great tips on how to begin your genealogical research and how to use it. These steps that are given, prepare, gather, and organize, those are very good steps to keep in mind as you go throughout your genealogical research. On the paper marked A at the top, I will walk you through how to use our local genealogical library as far as using genealogical research online through Ancestry.com. They are set up for Ancestry.com, Heritage Quest, and also Perseus. But I tend to use Ancestry.com because I find it does everything that I need it to do. And so with our limited time, I'm just going to take you through that, and then we will take you through very quickly on how to research a Baptist historical figure incorporating genealogy. On the first page, if you turn it sideways there, you'll see that when you go to the library's website, and that will automatically come up when you go to our local genealogical library, that will automatically come up on the screen when you type your number in. And you can access Ancestry.com through any of our library's computers. You do not have to be in the local history section to be able to access this. So under the tab you see at the top, local history, you will need to go through the local history section of the computer in order to access Ancestry.com for free. You cannot just go in and type that in on a search engine and get it for free. They will block you. Okay? So when the library's website comes up, you go to the tab there at the top, local history, you click on that, and then the page on the next page will come up, and I have highlighted the tab you will need to click on the right-hand side of the page. It is genealogy under the research online box. So you see that on your right side. You click on that. The next step is you will see Ancestry Library Edition, and you click on that. All these will appear in blue on the screen, and so everything that you can access appears on blue. So you access the Ancestry Library Edition. That takes you to the next page. And you will notice there, it's a very basic entry. You give the first name, last name, and you have to put those in their respective boxes. You can't put first name, last name in the one box and expect it to go there. Place where your ancestor might have lived and the birth year. Now you might ask, well, I know when he died, but I don't know when he was born. Well, then I would go to the birth, marriage, and death records, which you see that tab highlighted underneath there in yellow. And that SSDI is Social Security Death Index. If that person was old enough, if that person lived late enough to be on the Social Security list, then you can check him by the Social Security Death Index. When you hit that tab, which again, that will appear in blue, you go to the next page, which is birth, marriage, and death. And you notice there you can put the year of death in there. The reason I encourage you to either have a year of birth or a year of death is otherwise you're going to end up with everybody by that name between 1940 and 1700. And that would be quite an extensive list for you to have to work through. So if you have the date of birth or the date of death, which usually in Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia, you will have at least the date of birth on an individual if he's a more current Baptist by 1881, the 1881 period. And so you'll have the year of birth. And you'll be amazed with the simplicity of information on that previous page of the first, middle, last name, and the city or county that person might have lived in. What'll happen when you push, when you start entering a state on the place where your ancestor might have lived, and you start writing Virginia, by the time you get to VIR, it'll spell out Virginia, and you can just click on that, and it'll put it in the box. And so you end up the correct spelling. But then you hit the search tab, and then all kinds of things will come up on the screen. The census records of that particular individual by the years, and you can see, and then you click on those census records tabs, and that individual will come up on the actual census page. The actual census page will come up there, and then you can look them up on that census page. If you'll look carefully at the second page from the last, on the right side, you have the U.S. Census records. The United States, after its independence, began keeping censuses every decade, every 10 years, from 1790 on up to the present. You've no doubt filled out a census form or many times. These are available up to 1940. The reason they're not available after that is because they're counting on most of those people being deceased. And so by 1940, you know, that's 75 years. Every 75 years, that record will appear. That census will be a public record. So 1950s will not be available for quite some time, the 1950 census. But 1940, just recently, I think last year, became available for use. And so they don't want people getting into other people's private information. And so from 1940 back, that still gives you a lot of ground that you can work with. States, on the other hand, did their censuses in odd years. For example, Massachusetts, you would look for 1855. 1865, 1875, as opposed to the even years, they did the odd years. And those can also be helpful. Not all states had their own census, but the ones that did can be very beneficial. Canadian censuses are on odd years, 1861, 1871, 1881. And I've just recently gotten into using Canadian census records. And the setup of the pages is quite different from the American census records, but they still have basically all the same information available on them. And you can also access Canadian census records through Ancestry.com. You'll see down in the next box, UK census collection. Well, why would I need to know that? Well, perhaps your ancestor immigrated from the UK, or perhaps your Baptist minister came over from the UK and started working in America. I know in compiling the ministers of the Philadelphia Association that there were dozens and dozens of these ministers that came over from England and then became ministers in America through Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Association, and other associations. And so you have the UK census collection, and then the third box, of course, is the Canada census records, which began in 1851. And theirs are only available up to 1921. They're more strict than the U.S. is on census availability. Now, you'll also notice on the quick links on that page on the left-hand side, all these other things that you can access, military, tax, criminal, land, wills, pictures. Maybe an ancestor has posted a picture. Maybe there's a a portrait of a Baptist minister that one of his descendants has in their own private collection that you've never been able to see, or you would never be able to access except through that posted picture online. I have found a few of those online as well. Okay? Now, on the right-hand side of your folder, if you go back to the back, what we'll do real quickly is we'll run through the life of a obscure Baptist minister. I picked this man at random because I didn't know anything about him. But when I read his biographical statement here, he said there were some things in this biographical statement that caught my attention. And one of them was the fact of how he moved around so many different places. But the other one was Spurgeon really liked one of his sermons. And anyway, what I would like to do, this is from Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia. You see the reference on the back there. And that's the title page. That's what I was urging you to do earlier, is photocopy the title page. Then you have the page that this minister actually appears on. The minister we're going to look at and use for our workshop is Joseph Luke Blitch. Now, what's nice here is the particular writer who contributed this article to Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia gives you all three names. And that is always nice. Sometimes the contributing writer will only say J.V. Smith, and then you have to research and find out what their actual names are, and that makes it very difficult sometimes, especially when the surname is Smith or Jones. But here, you have all three names. And then I'll just read this real quickly, and then we'll take you through this. Joseph Luke Blitch was born March 3rd, 1839, in Duval County, Florida, son of Reverend Benjamin Blitch, an eminent Baptist preacher. He was converted at 15, but boy conversions being then unpopular, he was baptized 2 years later. He began talking for Jesus as soon as converted, and the Sunday after his baptism, he went 50 miles to hear a great preacher. Crowds had gathered at Reedy Creek. The preacher failed, and young Brother Blitch took charge of the meeting, and almost unconsciously began preaching from the words, "Behold, the Lamb of God." From that day until now, he has preached every Sunday, save one, from one to four sermons. From that day till now, he has preached every Sunday, save one, from one to four sermons. He graduated at Mercer University in 1863, the only graduate that year. Why would that be? The Civil War is going on. Preaching to three churches while in college, having been ordained by the Macedonia Church in 1860. He was pastor at Aberlare near Augusta. He was pastor at Aberlare near Augusta several years. At one time he immersed 99 converts before leaving the water. Wouldn't that be a thrilling occasion? He next served Shiloh, Macedonia, and Lafayette churches, thence to Macon, Georgia, where he established the Second Baptist Church, and at the close of a 2 years pastorate, left it with a good house and over 100 members. He was pastor 1 year at Little Rock, Arkansas, 2 years at Marshall, Texas, Boonville, and that should be two O's, in that Boonville, Missouri, 1 year. Lee's Summit, that should have an S on it. Lee's Summit, Missouri, 3 years. In 1873, he went to California, was pastor at Dixon, which, if you look that up on your map, is in Solano County. And that's something you want to do each one of these towns that is named, you want to look them up and see what county they're in, because that will clue you in as to what county histories to look under when you do your research in genealogy. Taking an active part officially in education and mission interests. In 1879, he located at Walla Walla, Washington Territory, and has already organized a vigorous church. About 2,000 have been converted under his ministry, of whom he has baptized 1,636. LaGrange University, Missouri, conferred upon him the degree Doctor of Divinity. Several of his sermons have been published, one of which, Thy Kingdom Come, so delighted Spurgeon of London that he said of it, every sentence carries the sound of a glorious victory. I love it. Now, in looking at this initially, you might think that in these couple of paragraphs, there's not much for you to go on. But actually, there's a wealth of information to extract here from this biographical sketch. Your key year here would be 1873. And the reason I say that is, in building your timeline, which is what you want to do, you want to start by building a timeline on your person. But in 1873, he went to California. So, if we were chalking out a timeline, for example, on this individual, we would work back to 1870 that he was at Lee's Summit. Now, this is a rough sketch, bear in mind, because he was at Lee's Summit 3 years before he went to California. So, 1870 to 1873, he was at Lee's Summit. Boonville, 1870, back to 1869, 1 year. See how we're backtracking? Marshall, Texas, 2 years, 1869 to 1867. Little Rock, Arkansas, 1867 to 66. Two years at Macon Second Baptist, 1866 to 64. And then you can pretty well determine what the other churches were that he was supplying. He was supplying those other churches during the Civil War period. So the reason why, possibly, he was supplying three or four churches at that time was that their ministers were away in the chaplaincy with the Confederate Army. So that's a good deduction that you could possibly make there. Okay. We know that Dixon is in Solano County, Boonville, Missouri is in Cooper County, and Lee's Summit is in Jackson County, Missouri. And so we want to make notes of all of those things. Okay, on your page that is titled Joseph Luke Blitch, which should be the second page, I formulated a basic timeline of the events of his life, and you will want to take this timeline with you as well as the biographical sketch on your subject every time you go to the library, because you might stumble onto something that you may want to double check to see if this person was actually in that locale at that time. And so what we know is he was born at this certain date in Duval County. That's in the Jacksonville area in northeast Florida. He was converted at age 15, which that would place him about his conversion about 1854-55. And actually, it would be between March 3rd, 1854 and March 3rd, 1855, based on his birthday. So within that year period, you know when he was converted. He was baptized 2 years later. That would make it 1856-57. He was ordained at Macedonia Baptist Church in 1860 at age 20 or 21. That's always significant to know what age a person was ordained or entered the ministry. He graduated at Mercer University, Macon, Georgia, in 1863. So you might check the Mercer University archives to see what they might have on him. He married Mattie Beasley, 1843 to 1890, on October 5th, 1863. Well, how do you know that, Brother Terry? Well, in going through Ancestry.com, we discovered his marriage certificate. And if you will look back a little bit further, you will see two pages that at the top say, "Find a grave memorial." Find a grave memorial. Find a grave memorial is a very important site for genealogical research. What this is individuals will post a grave site of their ancestor on the internet, and then they will give biographical information on that individual, as well as a possible obituary that they've discovered. And so this is a way that you tie in with family researchers who may have already done a lot of groundwork on your Baptist figure for you. And so when you go to Find a Grave Memorial, a lot of times you can either access this yourself by putting in your subject's name and his date of birth, and then putting the words "Find a Grave Memorial" in the search engine, and it'll come up. Or it may already be linked in with Ancestry.com when you enter that on your search through Ancestry.com. And so here, we know that he died on July 25th, 1882. Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia was published in 1881. That's why they do not have his date of death in there. He died a year afterwards. And so he dies in 1882. We know where he died: at Cambria, San Luis Obispo County, California. And then there's a nice obituary on him there, and it gives a lot of his background information. And so you have a lot of good material there. Now notice they do include the portrait from Cathcart, and they also include the section from Cathcart. So they have already accessed those two sources on their ancestor. On the second page here is his wife's information, and that will be directly linked on Find a Grave Memorial. For example, under Joseph Luke Blitch, you will see a link, if you look on the back of the page, where it says spouse, and Martha V. Beasley Blitch will be in blue. You click on that, and then her page will come up. And then you get all the information on her. Okay, now on the back of her page, I have put the Georgia marriage record for Joseph Blitch and her, for Martha. And this is an actual photocopy of the marriage page. And so you have their marriage record, where and when it took place, and who the presiding elder was who married them. Eugenius L. King. Okay? So it's a very wonderful tool to use and will provide you with wonderful information. They were married by a justice of the peace. Okay? We know that his Georgia pastorates were at Aberlair, which is in Richmond County near Augusta, Shiloh, Macedonia, and Lafayette, Walker County, Northwest Georgia. What you would do here is you would go to Starr's Baptist Bibliography, and Starr's Baptist Bibliography is a compilation of all the works that are written by, for, or against Baptists. And you will look up under Section A, Aberlair Baptist Church, and see if there were any church histories written on that. If so, then you can find specifically what his dates of ministry were there, possibly. Do the same thing for Shiloh, Macedonia, and Lafayette. The other thing that would occur to you is that you would look for a history of the Baptist denomination in Georgia and see what information you could find in that source. And of course, there is one written for that state history, History of the Baptist Denomination in Georgia, with biographical compendium and portrait gallery of Baptist ministers and other Georgia Baptists. So that's a nice edition to have there. This was done also the same year as Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia, so he is still living at the time. But anyway, I've copied the relevant pages here. On page 37, you have a nice biographical sketch of his father and portrait, Benjamin Blitch. That's nice to have. But then also you have his brother on page 38, and then you have him, and you have a different portrait there. And by the way, these portraits or engravings would indicate that there is possibly a daguerreotype or an early photograph of the minister from which the engraving was made, or possibly a painting. And that would be an interesting thing to try to track down as well. Engravings were not made from life. They had to be made off of either a portrait or a sketch or a painting. And so chances are, since there is an engraving in Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia and a different engraving here in the history of the Baptist denomination in Georgia, that there were possibly two photographs made of him or paintings done. Okay, so you have the relevant pages there. You have copied the title page of the source and the relevant pages there. And so now you're ready to move on. And I've given you a page out of a Baptist bibliography, Starr's Baptist Bibliography, which is the next sheet in your folder. And you look up Joseph Luke Blitch. If you didn't already know his date of death, Starr has provided that for you, but he's only given the year. Now you notice that this is a list of the works that this particular minister has written. And there are four different ones. He was also the editor of the Sunday Visitor about 1870. So you learn that from this. Okay? So here you have each of these different works that you can look up and see if you might be able to locate these on WorldCat. A lot of times when you look up an individual's works in Starr's Baptist Bibliography, he will give you codes as to where you can find copies of these at which libraries. But in this case, there doesn't seem to be any location symbols other than the fact that he tells you that this is also in McIntyre's Baptist Bibliography. The next sheet that you have in your folder, this is a page off of WorldCat. You can access WorldCat through your local library, and the librarian will be glad to assist you in this. WorldCat is short for World Catalog, and if that person has a work available, this will tell you. And here, they do show that he does have the funeral sermon of the late James T. Gruber, priest in Windsor Chapel, and then the author, Joseph Luke Blitch, and you notice that that's the same person because the dates and the names match. And it was published at Macon, Georgia, 15 pages. And then you notice up there it says libraries that own item. There's two copies available of that. It's a very rare sermon. But you notice also above that they list what those two libraries are that have that particular sermon. So what you can do is contact those libraries and see if they will make you a copy for your research. And a lot of the libraries are willing to do that for a fee. Okay. Next we come in your folder to a history of Jackson County, Missouri, containing a history of the county, its cities, towns, etc. We know that he left Georgia during the Civil War. Georgia was greatly devastated during the Civil War because, of course, that's where Sherman made his march to the sea. And so the economy was ruined, and a lot of people chose to make a new start out west. And apparently this is what he did. And so he starts moving west, and he ends up clear across the country over in Washington State. But as he's traveling west, he's ministering at different places along the way. One of those that we learn from his biography is at Jackson, is in Jackson County, Missouri. And he's at, we can see from this history, we can identify the church. He's at Union Baptist Church, where he is the one who dedicates the meeting house in 1873. Okay? So that's good information for you to have. Then we go into a Baptist associational history, History of the Blue River Baptist Association of Missouri, by Martin Rice, which was published in 1890. And we'll notice that he's sourced there also as part of a ministerial list. So we know that he was located within that, the bounds of that association. Okay. All of these, by the way, are accessed by going on Google, putting in Joseph Luke Blitch, and putting it in quote marks, and also J.L. Blitch. You want to try it both ways, because a lot of times the early Baptist ministers went only by their initials, J.L. or Joseph L. And so you try all three of those different search engines, and then if it's downloaded by Google Books, then that particular source is accessible. And so then it'll come up on the page, and then you copy the title page, you download it, copy the title page, and copy the page where he appears on. Okay. History of Solano County, California, 1879. We know that he was at the Dixon Baptist Church. And so there on page 286, you can find the Dixon Baptist Church. And on page 287, you find that he was called, began to preach at the church in November 1872. So that gives you a specific time frame for when he was ministering there. Okay? And continued as such until the death of Reverend D. King, which, as above stated, was October 3rd, 1877. Then he was chosen pastor of the church and continued to serve as such until July 1878. So there you've got wonderful information on his ministry there at Dixon Church, that Cathcart only told you he was there, but he didn't give you the dates. Well, now you have the dates and why and when he served there. Okay? Your next sheet shows you a history of Southern Baptists in Oregon, Washington, and Western Canada by Ronald Tonks. This is a thesis dissertation. We found this. We discovered this on WorldCat by looking under Southern Baptists, Washington. And then this came up, this book came up. Okay, so we discovered a dissertation. Well, it's possible that he's mentioned in that dissertation. I didn't access the dissertation, so I don't know, but it is possible. If nothing else, that dissertation will give you background to build your essay on Blitch by giving you information on Baptists and their growth and progress in the state. Okay, don't overlook other abilities in Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia. And if you'll flip that over on the back, since you know he was in Washington Territory, you look up Washington Territory in Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia, and sure enough, he is named there as one of the pioneer preachers, J.L. Blitch. Okay? There's another source. Okay. A History of the Baptists in Washington State. This is a manuscript book that has never been published. This is available over at the Baptist Bible College Library here in Springfield, Missouri. It was originally done by Thomas Murray in 1947. And so it's in manuscript form, typed manuscript form, and they have a copy of it over here. And on page 176, there is a reference to him on the back. You can see, if you just flip over your page, the man who eventually did appear was Reverend J.L. Blitch, an appointee of the American Baptist Home Mission Society. So now you find out he's connected with the American Baptist Home Mission Society, and so that opens up other possibilities. You check the American Baptist Home Mission Society booklets, for the 1870s, and you can see when his possibly when his date appointment was and where he was told to minister. Okay. Now, the next thing in your list, I wanted to show you the various differences between the census records and how they progressed over time. And so you've got three blank census records there, pages, 1820, 1850, and 1900. And I wanted to clue you in on what some of the differences are here. Beginning in 1790, up until the 1840 census, they would only list the head of the household. So all you had was the husband's name or whoever the head of the house. If it was a widow, you would only have her name. They wouldn't list the spouse's name. They wouldn't list the children's names. But they would only list them by categories. And these census records are still significant in that you can find out if there might have been a child who was living in that time period who was deceased by the time the 1850 census came around. But if you look at the 1820 census form, and by the way, these census forms are downloadable off of your genealogical website on Ancestry.com. But you have them listed, and you would just the census taker would just check a box. So many under 10 years old. So many under 10 to 16, which has a wide age spectrum. Okay? Well, by the time you get to the 1850 census, if you'll look at that next one, you can see a significant difference here. And what they will include on the 1850 census is the spouse's name and age and place of birth. So you might have somebody's name there and then his wife's name, and they'll give his place of birth, usually a state or country, England, Pennsylvania, or whatever. And they will tell you their age, which then, once you discover that on the 1850 census, if you didn't know their age before, and you discover their age, then you can make the trip back to Ancestry.com and put in that approximate date of birth, and it may open up whole new possibilities for you on that. So, from 1790 to 1840 is very minimal information. 1850 on contains great information for genealogical researchers. A lot of the time, if a Baptist figure has lived up to 1850 and beyond, that is the only place I've been able to discover a wife's name is off the census record. And that's the only place. And so it's a wonderful tool. Now, when 1900 came around, it was really a boon because if your person was foreign born, they also give you the year that that person immigrated to the U.S. So that is nice. Another thing they include is the actual month and year of birth. Now, they won't give the day because that was private information even in that day. But they would give you the month and the year they were born. So if before you thought they were born sometime around 1846 to 1847, on the 1900 census, it will clarify that for you. They'll say March 1847, and then you have a wonderful time there. And that will give you the month and year of birth for not only the husband, but the wife and the children as you go down the categories. So if your figure lived until 1900, you can get a real boon during that period. Okay, now on your next handout, you'll see the actual census records from Ancestry.com that Joseph Luke Blitch appears on. In the 1850 U.S. Census, you can see he's about right there where I've got the arrow at, about two-thirds of the way down. He's age 38 at that time. His wife is 36. And then you have the children's names listed there. Now notice that they're all born in Georgia. If you go over to your category place of birth on the census record, they're all born in Georgia. So it gives you a starting place and all their ages. So they have children all the way from Rebecca, who is 1 year old, all the way up to Daniel, who is 16 years old. Okay? So wonderful information there. Sometimes you'll run across erroneous information on a census record, even on a census record. Why is that? Well, it depends on who the person was given the information. If the census taker came to the house and the only person there was the 10-year-old, and they asked, when was your mother born? When was your dad born? Well, they might very well get the birthday, but they might get the year off by 3 or 4 years. And I've seen that happen before on a census record where you know somebody was born. You have positive proof someone was born in 1841, and they end up on the census record being born in 1844 or 46. Well, that's because erroneous information was given to the census taker, or he heard it wrong and wrote it down wrong. So that is possible. So that's why you want to check more than one census record. And so the more census records you have, if you can go 1850, 60, 70, and 80, and three of them indicate that he was born in 1841, and only one of them says 1846, well, your chances are that he was born in 1841, and the one was a mistake. So you have the 1860 census record for Georgia here. This is on the eve of the Civil War. And of course, everything was still fairly normal at that time. But he's down at the bottom. And you notice it says IN period, B period, clergyman. That stands for itinerant Baptist clergyman. So that fits his description. He was going around these four churches in Georgia ministering to each one of them. And so you see the children that they had at that time. And you would actually, on Ancestry.com, arrows at the bottom of the page, you click the right arrow that's pointing to the right, and that takes you to the next page, and then you get the rest of the children's names if there are more children. You will also want to note the page numbers up the top right-hand corner, page number 12. If you're marking things down and you're citing from that particular census record, you would want to put down the district and so forth in that particular place. 1880, he's in Washington Territory. 20 years later, he's clear across the country. And you would never think to look for him there if you didn't have already the sketch in Cathcart's Baptist Encyclopedia and you knew he had gone on there. You would think you had the wrong person if you were on Ancestry and one census record, he's in Georgia, and next census record, he's in Washington State. But having known that he moved there, then you realize you still have the same person. And, of course, it designates him there. I don't know if you can see that well enough, but it does say that he's a minister of the gospel there. And what's interesting here is it says that he was born in Florida, which he wasn't. So apparently somebody else was giving the information there besides himself. Or let me correct that. It does show he was born in Florida, which is correct, that he was born there. Okay. And then your last thing in your folder on the right side is a map of Georgia showing past and present county lines. Now, we know that he appears on the 1850 census in Georgia. And so this county map, which is available at your genealogical society libraries, they will have the county map showing how the counties have changed from 1790 all the way up to 1900 or 1940. And counties, of course, greatly reduce as time goes on. They were really wide to begin with. And so why is this significant? Well, if you can pinpoint the places where those churches were located, which you can do that using Georgia Baptist history maps and so forth, then you can realize that where a church is now in a certain county, it wasn't before. And so you may need to look under a different county than where that church is located today, if you're doing past historical research. And so that comes in very handy. Okay? And so Joseph Luke Blitch dies at Cambria, California on July 25th, 1882 at the age of 43, which is a relatively young age. His wife survives him by 8 years, passing away in 1890. And there are California Baptist histories that he might be mentioned in, as well as the county histories. But I found that the county histories oftentimes are the better source for finding information. And that concludes our second session.